The following podcast is brought to you by The Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good evening, everyone. Can you all hear me okay? Excellent. It's really wonderful to see so many familiar faces, Dharma brothers and sisters, and some new faces. My name is Fugan, and I am calling in from Cape Cod, Massachusetts, from the Hyannis Zendo, which is, we're an affiliate of Village Zendo, and we have a small group that practices out here and practices in here too. And it's a wonderful place. We're about to begin our in-person sitting again this weekend. So if anybody's on the Cape this summer and wants to sit with us, please get in touch. We'd love to have you. Yesterday I was out on the local beach here, our town beach, and I saw that the beach plums had blossomed. And they have this wonderful smell. It's such a unique smell, kind of very sweet, but also it smells like sunshine and sand, and I'm not sure how to describe it. But I was coming down to the beach and I smelled it before I saw the flowers that had bloomed. And it was, it just hit me really deeply. It's such an immediate familiar smell for me. And it's got a dreamlike quality. These blossoms are fragile and they probably will be gone today after the rain. And it's almost like a dream. Once the smell disappears, I forget it. It just sort of vanishes from my mind until the next year, and then it comes back with this this power. And it's just each plums doing their thing. So today I want to talk about steadfastness in our zazen, or about steadfast sitting. And this week, as you all know, marked the 100 year anniversary of the massacre in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's a century ago, you know. Upwards of 300 people were murdered, and this flourishing Black community was destroyed. And it's still resonating, and maybe now with the attention it is finally getting in the more accuracy of our hindsight, it's resonating in our lives. And last week, of course, was the one-year anniversary of the murder or execution of George Floyd. You know, this visible and terrible continuing epidemic of systemic state violence against Black men and women. And so when you think in steadfast sitting, What do you think? When Yao Shan was asked that, he said, "You think non-thinking." And how do you think non-thinking? Beyond thinking. According to Dogen, the activity of beyond thinking is crystal clear. Right. So the activity of beyond thinking. This is not an inert space, not a blank thing. This action of steadfast sitting, the activity of beyond thinking, is crystal clear. There's not a mark on this action. And so there are many responses to racial injustice and this violence. These recent conversations and debates on race and systemic racism, you know, which obviously include who can vote, how our education system works, what can be taught, what can't. it's open spaces for us to embody and enact anti-racism in our lives, in our relationships, in our work life, and in our spiritual communities, as is happening here at Village Zendo and in Hyannis Zendo. And when I think of steadfast sitting today, in this context, in the context of our country's past and present struggles with racism, the heroic actions of the civil rights movement come to mind. You know, Rosa Parks refusing to give up her seat in 1955. The Little Rock Nine students staying at their desks. The lunch counter sit-ins, the freedom riders on the buses. Crystal clear. And tonight, though, I'd like to take a few minutes to share, maybe introduce or remind you of a lesser known local example of steadfastness in the face of racial violence, and to think about how this might help us consider our own experiences as Zen students at this moment in time. So Eugenia Forts was a local civil rights activist, and she was an important community member here in Hyannis. Her name is a household name in much of Cape Cod, although she's not that widely known outside the Cape. She was born in 1911, and she was an immigrant. And her story is not unlike many immigrant stories today. At the age of nine, her mother and she and her mother followed her father to the States from Cape Verde. He had come to work and get set up so he could bring his family over. And they were poor, and they worked hard. They first came to New Bedford and then settled on the Cape shortly after that, while Eugenia was still just a girl. And she worked as a housekeeper for a wealthy family over in Hyannisport. She was a cook. She then spent many years as a baker and a cook in the public schools here. And she called New England, the New England of her youth at least, the Up South. She said there was a Down South, and here in New England in the North, we're in the Up South. And the towns she lived in on the Cape, which were Harwich and then Hyannis, were segregated. And in Boston, where she went to work one winter, there was segregation not as blatant or as on the surface as in the South, but clearly seen and enforced. And so from an early age, Eugenia, you know, she noted that how much she hated this injustice that she saw, that she would not remain quiet. And Eugenia joined the NAACP in Boston in 1936. And it happened at a time when she went one winter where she needed work because work on the Cape slowed down in the winter. And she went to Boston, but was refused boarding at the YMCA. They didn't accept Black people then. And so she ended up staying at the Harriet Tubman House in Boston. And I'd like to share a story from her life that happened about 10 years later. In 1945 or 46, or sort of various accounts of the year. And Eugenia had invited a friend of hers who she met during that time when she was staying at the Harriet Tubman House. She invited her to the Cape to stay with her in her small house, which is really just down the road here, less than a mile away. So Eugenia and her friend Marie walked from her house down to the local beach, which is the same one where I was enjoying the beach plum blossoms. And they settled in on a hot August day. And pretty soon they were approached by a policeman who told them they had to, that the police had gotten a call from one of the neighbors complaining. You see, they were sitting on the white side of the beach and they needed to move. And the cop said to Eugenia, the colored sit on the other side. And so her friend got up to move, but Eugenia simply said, oh, they do? And she just kept staring at the ocean, kept looking out at the ocean, and she didn't get up. And her friend was scared, and rightly so. You know, segregation in 1945 was the norm, and police violence was also common. But Eugenia didn't budge. She grabbed the hem of her friend's skirt and tugged her down and said, sit down, Marie. And Marie sat. And not long after, the white woman from this neighborhood who first complained came back with more police. But Eugenia and Marie kept sitting. And in an interview she gave in 2004, she said, I sat on that damn beach until 5:30. She wouldn't move, you know, even though they were hot, thirsty, and hungry, and they hadn't been planning on staying. They stayed. They didn't budge. And the next year, the Civic Association, which Eugenia said was really a Klan group, tried to buy this beach and make it into a private beach so they could completely segregate it. But she stood up in front of the community and argued and shared her experiences, and her efforts helped keep this beach public. And so during her life, she became an important figure in the civil rights movement. For three summers, she rented out a small cottage behind her house to Thurgood Marshall when he was the lead lawyer at the NAACP. And during those summers, at least some of them, he was preparing this major civil rights legislation, or litigation, excuse me, that would go before the Supreme Court. And she collaborated with Ted Kennedy in 1961 to report on the Freedom Riders to the White House. And she had, when he was just a boy, she had served him in their house here in Hyannisport as well. And she founded the chapter, the Cape chapter of the NAACP in 1961 as well. And in 2004, just 2 years before she passed away, that beach was named in her honor. So it's the Eugenia Forts Beach now. Dogen highlights a misconception of those he calls careless students of recent times. And according to Dogen, these students think the endeavor of Zen is completed when your heart is quiescent, as Zazen is a place of calmness. And well, in the story I just related, Eugenia was by all accounts pretty calm under pressure. You know, just sitting on the beach all day in the hot sun under this threat of violence. It doesn't sound like quiescent sitting. It wasn't quiescent, but it was crystal clear. And so Mazu Daoyi, Mazu was an 8th century Zen teacher, a Chinese Zen teacher, who studied under Nan Yue, who was himself a disciple of the 6th patriarch. And Mazu became known as Great Master Ma. And he was, by all accounts, an impressive figure, a mountain of a man. He had a big knot on his forehead, and there were supposedly circular marks imprinted on the soles of his feet. And it was said that when he stuck out his tongue, it would reach up over his nose. The 6th patriarch prophesied Great Master Ma's coming. He said, a great horse will come forth and trample everyone in the world to death. Which might mean that Mazu's teaching would obliterate the illusions and clear his disciples' minds. And Mazu passed his energetic style of Zen, which is really based on Zen of the ordinary experience, to 139 enlightened disciples, including Linji or Rinzai. And early in his life, Mazu was known for his severe devotion, his rigorous Zen training. He would sit solid as a rock in the heat or cold, in the rain and snow, in the bright sun, and often all night long. You know, and it sounds like sort of this vision of what we have when we start off, you know, to be this extremely tough, macho Zen guy. But one day, his teacher, Nanyue, came into his hut and asked him, "What are you aiming at by sitting in all this meditation?" Mazu replied simply, "I aim to become a Buddha." Nanyue then picked up a tile and began to rub it on a rock. Master Ma said, "What are you doing rubbing that tile, teacher?" Nanyue said, "I'm polishing it to make a mirror." And Mazu said, "How can you make a mirror by polishing a tile?" Nanyue said, "How can you become a Buddha by sitting meditation?" So roof tiles in China at the time were made in the kiln and then polished to become shiny and smooth and beautiful. But no matter how long you polish it, it never becomes a mirror. And sitting with the intention to attain Buddhahood means that you are immediately separated from your own Buddha nature. You're separating yourself from your true self, and in doing so, it becomes unattainable, like polishing a tile to make a mirror. Now, as the old saying goes, the eye cannot see itself. Nanyue went on saying, "If you practice sitting Zen, you practice sitting Buddha. If you practice steadfast sitting, you will know that Zen is not about sitting or lying down. In the practice of sitting Buddha, or we might say steadfast sitting, the Buddha has no fixed form. Buddha is not stuck on a cushion in this rock-solid position. Buddha is not restricted to time or place. And if you look for her just there, you'll miss her." Suzuki Roshi commented on this encounter. He said, "When Mazu becomes Mazu, his Zazen becomes true Zazen, and Zen becomes Zen. When you are you, then no matter what you do, that is Zazen." And Eugenia Forte's sitting on the beach was true sitting on the beach, Buddha sitting on the beach. And 10 years later, Rosa Parks, refusing to give up her seat, again was steadfast sitting. So Eugenia Forte was really throughout her life a fierce woman who pursued justice. And she's really a continual inspiration. And I think for every time I walk on her beach, which is most every day. But I've also found Marie to be a powerful teacher for me. She was scared, you know, and that fear made her first want to acquiesce to this police demand. You know, her rightful fear of racial violence at a time when racism was open and rampant and accepted by this white society. It made her, you know, very reasonably move towards self-preservation. Eugenia's strength helped Maria to sit down in the midst of her great fear and to sit through that whole day, even with this fear. Thus, Marie, being fully herself, being fully human, was sitting steadfastly, even with this fear. You know, we have our daily practice and regular schedule of Zazen. We have the chance over and over to become ourselves through this practice, but know, Buddha sitting is not just sitting on the cushion. I'd heard of a local class after hearing the story of Eugenia Forts and Marie using that phrase, sit down, Marie, as a game. You know, one student would stand up and the others would shout, sit down, Marie. And it reminds me of Zwigon calling out, oh, master, and answering himself, yes. Now, in this moment, Zwigon addressing himself, is calling out the master at this moment, as this moment, answering yes, this is this moment meeting itself. And so sitting lately, I've been practicing, sit down, Fugan, when my mind wanders, faced with crisis or trouble or just running away, I say, sit down, Fugan. And this is Marie's steadfastness supporting me, resonating today. This steadfast sitting, as Dogen said, is not quiescent, and it's not pretty all the time, but it's crystal clear. On the beach that day, two very different women were practicing being fully human in a very difficult moment. You know, likely afraid and hot, tired, and face to face with this deeply ingrained social and cultural bigotry. You know, today's world is in many ways very different, but not nearly different enough. And all our lives are filled with challenging moments. You know, we can't know exactly the experience of Eugenia and Marie that day, particularly me as a white man. But we can bear witness to what they suffered and learn from their strength and their strength with their fear. We can steadfastly attend to who we are in our own moments so we can become ourselves. And when we bear witness to the suffering of others, and in that bearing witness, let the natural action that takes place, the crystal clear action, let ourselves realize our Buddha nature. And this is what Dogen calls the point of Zazen. It's right here, he says. This is the point of steadfast sitting. Even if you go myriad miles, it is right here. So fully polishing a tile is fully polishing a tile. This crystal clear action lets us reveal the mirror. Fully sitting is Buddha sitting. And this is also steadfastness, and the Buddha is revealed. That means you are revealed, tired, sad, blissful, anxious. Not becoming is needed when we fully encounter ourselves in or fully encounter ourselves as the world. So when we smell the beach plum blossoms, it's just this moment of it, not last year's, not tomorrow's, just now. And when it's time to stand up, or, you know, in the case of Eugenia and Marie, to sit down and let your voice be heard or let your silence resonate, steadfastness lets us be present, not running from fear, anxiety, or our discontent. We can become ourselves even with that discontent, that fear and anxiety. Standing, walking, sitting, or lying down, which means it's always available. So I'd like to end with the last stanza of Dogen's poem, The Point of Zazen. Clear water all the way to the bottom. A fish swims like a fish, vast sky, transparent throughout. A bird flies like a bird.